You're listening to Expansion on RepublicBroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and I'm speaking with John Kaminsky, my guest, who has written copious essays, and some of these are in the form of books. I don't know if you can still buy all these books. Can we buy any of them still?
You can email me. They're not really available on any active website at this point.
I know. I think PayPal won't allow you to sell them, right?
No, PayPal threw me off when I wrote Revolt of the Goyim.
Oh. Revolt of the Goyim?
Yeah.
I see. And would you like to tell us what that was about?
That was a story about the Goyim of the world waking up and seeing how many Jewish influences control their lives.
And is PayPal Jewish?
PayPal shuts people down on the basis of one complaint. So if somebody could call up and claim it was anti-Semitic, and they would be, that's what I assume I was shut down for.
I see. And that's that very convenient method of control, this term anti-Semitic. And I always say Arabs are Semites, too.
Well, I've had all sorts of interference from Comcast and all sorts of unexplained blockages, and it's hard for me to deduce what's actually happening now because it's combined with computer problems, so I'm not really sure if I have an accurate fix on anything,
well, technically. Well, at any rate, I want to discuss more of these, the writing that you have put out in some of these books, because you describe something over and over and over, and you refer to it as the two warring factions of the American psyche. And I'll repeat that word because I said it too fast. The two warring, warring, factions of the American psyche. And we were discussing consensual thought, crowd behavior. Everybody's doing it, so I can do it too, you know. Mm-hmm. I can throw away my plastic bottles because everybody's doing it. Doesn't make a difference if I do a little more of it. So you have this line on page 155 of Recipe for Extinction. In my dream, I'm looking out over the edge of a vast cliff, searching the infinite distance for a word, how to describe the great divide between the two warring factions of the American psyche. And you go on to describe the people who allow this mass murder of others in the world to go on, and who don't care. And then their relatives and fellow citizens who do care and who oppose it and who are trying desperately to make their brothers see the slick men on TV are lying to everyone about practically everything. Two men, back-to-back, countrymen, yet enemies. Two factions paralyzed by an enraged silence, one bloodthirsty and implacable, the other witnessing perhaps the end of civilization as we know it. So that's the recipe for extinction. And if it happened on Mars, it may happen here, too.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. I'll stand by, I stand by everything I've written, and I kind of like that description. It's like people, somehow in the world, people who otherwise wouldn't have been enemies have been made enemies on the basis of the information that they've taken in.
Right, and that war isn't, someone told me that war isn't about something. It's not about religion. It's not about money. It's not about oil. It's not about territory. War is the agenda. If you pit people against one another by very crafty strategy, then they take care of everything. You just sit back and watch, and they'll eliminate themselves. And that's the recipe for extinction. So we have a three-minute break, and then we'll have a nice long section to discuss this.
Very good.
Listening to Expansion on RepublicBroadcasting.org, the RBN Network. This is Sophia, your host, and my guest today is John Kaminsky. internet author, essayist, formerly a newspaper reporter. He explained to me once, many years ago, that when he was working the wire, wasn't that what it was called?
Yep.
At a paper, I believe it was in Massachusetts, shortly after 9/11, he was absolutely, he couldn't take another word coming across the AP, I guess it was the wire.
Yep.
And it was all lies and more lies about 9/11. And you basically quit your job. You told them you couldn't put a paper together out of these articles.
Well, I was ready to go. That whole general trend in mainstream newspapers gets really odious once you look behind the scenes and have some idea of what the motivating forces of these items are. I remember slapping in stories about Slobodan Milosevic and how the Associated Press would really paint him as this diabolical enemy. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that I realized we'd gone in and completely destroyed Yugoslavia because we wanted to break up the country because it suited our criminal purposes a little better.
In what way?
Breaking off Kosovo, that's like the crime hub of Europe where all the drugs come through from Afghanistan. We've made that into an independent country and also built a big air base there. Serbia never would have let us do that.
And I also heard from one of my guests that this was a way to start recruiting young men who perceived they didn't have much of a future from the Balkans to make them the paid mercenaries of mm-hmm. Blackwater and to start bringing in factions of people so you could trade military forces and ship them all over the globe. For instance, our military has been shipped to the Middle East where the enemy is the raghead other mm-hmm. and a subhuman. And then when they martial law us, I've made this a verb, to martial law, they will assign mercenaries who are of other nationalities and ethnicities to police us and lock us up because we will be the subhuman, the other, the American that is developing this reputation around the world of being an unconscious, greedy, ruthless, brutal slob, right?
And well-deserved, I must say.
Yes. Now, throughout all your essays and your rantings, even, is what I consider to be a very strong principle. And this principle seems to me what motivates your writing. I don't know that you necessarily offer solutions other than we must begin to take responsibility for our actions on an individual level and for our participation. We must become conscious of what we're participating in.
Right.
I want to read this paragraph from Recipe for Extinction on page 160. Listen right now in the silence of the canyon of your heart. You can hear it. America's righteous religion. God tells George W. Bush what to do. Kill all those who oppose you. Take what you want from those who have what you want. Hey, it's in the Bible, which is also the Torah, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, all over the place. Listen to the sound, the American sound of mass death. It is evil and it is religious. In the silence of the canyon of your heart, it is all you can hear, and no words can blot it out.
That's where we're at.
That is. And we, as individual people, have to start listening in that canyon of our heart and saying, all right, what am I really doing?
Yep.
So,
don't vote.
Sorry?
Don't vote.
Don't vote. That's one thing. But how, again, now your audiences, maybe who don't have a strong constitution, as you do. I mean, it's tough to sit and bear this. We want to attach our hope to something, and people attach it to God, to Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, that there will be a judgment day, that it will be upon all of humanity, and those who have not behaved like this will have some reprieve coming. It's very hard to sit in a complete chasm, a nothing, a void. So there are plenty of people who are religious, who call themselves Christians, who don't organize with these religious institutions and entities that have promoted and fostered and participated in this global war, this trend of global war. And those,
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so are they not to connect with something that they call religious or spiritual or godly because it can't exist?
Well, it's funny. I have another side of that coin, a story I can tell you. There's a website in England, Truth Seeker. And
yes.
He insists I'm Jewish because I keep knocking all the religions and not just Judaism. Judaism may be the worst, but it's my suspicion that the mechanism that is Judaism controls the other two, controls Christianity and controls Islam. And I believe that they were set up, that whole memeplex, if you will, was set up for that very purpose, to guarantee a constant tension. The strategy of creative tension, which is a phrase you hear in some popular books, seems to be the story of humanity down through history, where there has to be some kind of profit-making mechanism, which is usually war, because we haven't advanced beyond that. But there is this almost cultural, sociological guarantee of conflict by having these competing versions. And the people who run the competing versions have all these spies going back and forth, which is why traditional Catholics talk freely about the Jewish takeover of the Catholic Church through Vatican II in 1964 and other things that have happened since. So you've got a belief mechanism, a control mechanism, that pretty much prescribes and limits what people can do with their lives. And these folks are constantly making war on each other, and that seems to be their purpose, to galvanize their populations of parishioners into a kind of a combat mode against some group that they designate as their Satan. And that's when I go back to talking about the concepts of religion and afterlife as creating situations on this planet that are, for my money, evidence of a serious pathological, psychological disease.
Which is the disease of constant conflict.
Belief in an afterlife directly translates to the mass murder of innocent people in Iraq. That's what I'm saying.
Belief in afterlife directly translates to the mass murder of innocent people in Iraq.
Right.
Because you can do it and get away with it.
No, it's because of the structures for conflict that have been created. The Islamics hate the Jews, and the Jews hate the Catholics, and there's all this supernatural sanction of this criminal behavior. It's like George Bush praying to God. You know, how sincere is that?
Well, it's an act.
Well, the whole thing is.
Now we have a caller. Would you like to take a call?
Oh yes.
All right, John in Canada. John, are you on the line?
Hi, guys.
Hi. I'm not a guy.
Oh, well, you know, it's a popular way of saying hi to my girlfriend, too. But anyway, yeah, great show. Love the topic. You know, you'll find that all religions will conclude that God's will is just. If God is of all people, God's interest would be to treat ourselves fairly. So that's why you get, like, from Christ and Hillel, which is the founder of the Jewish religion, and Muhammad, saying in one fashion or another, treat others as you would wish to be treated yourself. And if we do that, we live in a better, just world, because you don't want to be put in a concentration camp, deprived of food and water, or have your house stolen. So it's very easy. So if you follow truth, you will see that there's a struggle for a path of justice or righteousness. To be good with God is to serve the interests of another. So all these terrible things in our world can so easily be remedied by just going by that principle. You look at Israel, you go, well, you're stealing an innocent person's home. I don't care what religion you say you're of, that's a criminal offense. That's an innocent person you're victimizing, who could just as soon be myself or anybody else. So I'll speak for that innocent person you're putting into a concentration camp. And then there are people who get rewarded financially by lying. And we had Palin on Charles with her interview she did yesterday. And she said that her quote was...
We are being interrupted by a break. Please hang on, John, and we'll be back.
Okay. This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and I'm talking to John Kaminsky, my guest, and we had a caller, John, also another John from Canada. John, are you with us still?
Yeah, I am.
All right.
Yeah, I was just going to make the point that Palin did an interview with Charlie Gibson, and she had said, quote, "For Russia to have exerted such pressure in terms of invading a smaller democratic country unprovoked is unacceptable," unquote. Now, she knows, of course, Putin was interviewed on CNN, and he said, you know, we're just obeying our agreement that we have with South Ossetia, that if they come under attack, we will come to their aid. They, the commander of the Georgian military went on their television and said, we are going to war against, or we are going to war South Ossetia, and Mr. Putin quoted him verbatim declaring this war. We have video footage of their military attacking schools, churches, all the hospitals. They say there was their death toll was at least 1,600 people. They killed 70 peacekeepers. So we're all fully aware of this, but Palin feels it financially within her interest to lie to the face of God. There's no for, and it's really, really subtle, but if you see the interview, you can see it in her face, because Gibson says unprovoked, and you can see it in her face. Yeah, she wants to play that. Look, I'm going to lie like this, and because it's going to be really beneficial, a lot of Americans. And when she gave her speech at the RNC, she had talked about how she wanted to, or she did ridicule Obama for suggesting a prisoner should have rights, and they all laughed. Same thing with community organizing. Let's laugh at Christ and be the Pontius Pilate, the governor, because these people have no real power. And I'm not saying that all the people at the RNC are despicably, let's just say, evil or whatever. I think it's just they're manipulated by suggestion. They don't know what to believe. They're like soldiers in many respects. They want leadership to really tell them what opinion they should have, because this stuff is way too difficult. When you talk about a simple principle as treating others as you would wish to treat yourself, to me it's the simplest thing. I can explain it, I think, in a couple seconds. But I see so many people murdered because they don't have that ability to just say, look, if you're a Jewish person, you wouldn't steal an innocent person's home because you'd be an anti-Semite. Those who say Israel is Jewish are the true anti-Semites, because this is a criminal regime that thieves from an innocent Christian family, innocent Muslim family. And, of course, many Americans aren't even aware of that. They don't even understand that they go into a person's home at gunpoint and tell you to leave without your belongings, without your toys under your Christmas tree. And if you don't like it, you know, maybe they'll just shoot you. And they're paid their salaries and their weapons are paid for by the American taxpayer. And Frontline years ago did a documentary showing how these people lose their homes. And if you knew that and you saw it, you'd say, that's an ungodly act. And then they'd say, you're being anti-Semite. No, those who practice such hatred for the Jewish religion are the true anti-Semites, because Jews don't treat others with disrespect as lovers of God, containing the whole of all humanity. And this is the teachings of the Jewish religion, if you can believe it. This is the incredible thing about God being a property of order to chaos, is this struggle is eternal. These arguments have always been present as a way to defend ourselves, as Muhammad teaches, as Hillel teaches, and as Christ teaches, and a lot of other guys too. I mean, it's called the Golden Rule. If you type the Golden Rule, you can get some magnificent books and all kinds of great stuff on the subject. But like I say, Palin on CNN, MSNBC, they refused to correct her this morning. They were all smiles. They played the audio, but they just wouldn't say it at all. They just say, well, she did such a great job, just as they told you before. And you know what hypnosis is, too, suggestion, because I heard so many people go, yeah, Palin, she gave such a great speech, and that's all they told you. And really, her speech was terrible. There was no addressing any of your terrible issues that are confronting your survival rates. The speech was horrible. It was about denying people rights and ridiculing those who try to do community service. And to think the next day, or a couple of days later, I should say, last night, they did a speech on service to your country. And Obama didn't think that was a good tool to go, look, they're ridiculing public service. No, he's going to play the game. He's all smiles because, hey, he wants to kill people in Afghanistan. He thinks that's the solution. And really, if we follow the crime scene leads at the real murder scene, of which is what justice is, and God would will, we know that the 9/11 was financed by General Mahmoud Ahmad, who was at the White House 2 days prior to 9/11, and was sent to the Taliban to let them know no evidence will be brought against the accused, otherwise an innocent man in Christ. If you handed him over, you'd be going against Allah, and you wouldn't be supporting the victims of 9/11 either. So the Taliban are only guilty supporting the defense of the victims of 9/11 by demanding evidence.
John,
reform.
Thank you.
Anyway, I don't want to go too long because psychologically people can't deal with it, but I really love your show. I really love the station. What do you guys think?
Well, we're probably going to come up on a break. You spoke of probably 50 different things.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to pick one and discuss it, and I think we'll probably pick, I don't know, I'll let my guest pick one of those threads.
Sure. All right, well, thanks for listening to me. I really love everything you guys are doing. Talk to you later. I'll listen up off the air.
Thank you. All right. So what do you want to say about that little speech?
Well, I caught the inclusion of Hillel in the Pantheon, and I got to thinking about the techniques of Jewish distraction. And this fellow had a monologue going for, I didn't time him, but it was quite a long thing. It sounded intriguing, but at the end, there was the equation put forth that Jews, Christians, and Muslims are all on the same team, and I'd have to object to that.
All right, well, we'll listen to your objection on the other side of this break.
Okay.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host. We're heading into our last half hour of our my talk with John Kaminsky, internet essayist. We just were treated to rather a long, I would say almost like a diatribe by one of our callers who was offering a perspective that John is going to now comment about in his own inimitable style. This concept of Jews, Christians, and Muslims are all on the same team.
Oh, yeah, the Kevin Barrett syndrome.
All right, here we go. Bashing Barrett. All right, what's wrong with that?
No, I don't think I'll go there right now. I wanted to, I was thinking, I think about a lot of things on the break, as you do, I'm sure.
Actually, I try to write one thing down so that I don't come back and go, where were we?
Yeah. Well, he gave us a lot of different things. Most of them were congenial sentiments. The inclusion of Hillel in the Pantheon indicated to me that he was somehow Jewish. His sentence ran on for, it had to be more than 5 minutes, and he just kept going. And in fact, if I hadn't said something, he would still be going. So I see that, and call me paranoid if you like, but I see that as a Jewish monitoring of your program, and his wanting to step in and bring us back to Sarah Palin, who is it's a distraction from what we were talking about.
Well, it is in the news now, and to be fair, a lot of listeners are watching the mainstream news, and they have comments about this Sarah Palin and what is she all about, what move is this on the chessboard. But I think he was trying to say that the fundament of all, if that's even good English, all three religions are the same, that their teachings are essentially to treat others as you would want to be treated yourself. Yet this isn't going on.
Well, because they're not.
But they're not the same. You're saying this isn't a parallel playing field.
No, that's why Jews spell their name G-D. And there's more than just a visual distinction there.
I don't understand that at all. G-D.
Instead of G-O-D, that the Muslims and most of the other religions use, the Jews spell it G-D to indicate that it's different.
That God is different?
Yes, and that the text of the Talmud is certainly different. The text that they use to justify what they do. They are constant invaders of countries. You can study the historical list. And when he talked about Jews believing in the Golden Rule, I almost burst out laughing, because according to the Talmud and Jewish religion, the Golden Rule has no place in the Jewish religion. The Jewish religion is only for Jews, and their objective is to kill or enslave everyone else on the planet. This is the big thing that people aren't getting. This is the thing that I've been prohibited from saying across the internet and around the world.
Well, let me
their ask you. Philosophical objective in the Talmud, as stated, is to control everything, rule the world, and treat the rest of the world as cattle. That's in the Talmud. That's expressed by all the great Jewish philosophers, especially Maimonides. This is what people don't realize, because Jews control the money and the media, and they suppress. Think about all the things that have been suppressed down through time. We've both made a living on analyzing suppressed information. Our focus has been 9-1-1, but that is like the classic example of what has been going on, and we really haven't talked about 9-1-1, and that's our specialty. I, for the last 3 or 4 years, have been just beating the same drum that we have to analyze the Jewish angle of 9-1-1 because the evidence is so compelling, and yet you've seen it closer than maybe anybody in the world. Everybody in the 9/11 skeptics movement is falling all over themselves not to discuss it.
I know. That's very, very obvious. And even people who run the big websites in 9/11 have admitted, I know this secondhand in a couple of cases, and on good sourcing, that they know that, let's just call it Israel, was highly culpable in the execution of 9/11, and yet you can't say a thing about it. You just
can't.
They don't want it mentioned on their website.
So that is the essence of what I do. That is the place where I am. Everybody's bleeding, and the world the people I know are standing there. They've got their fists up beside their head. They're saying, I don't want to hear this because it will be bad for me to hear this.
It will be bad for me, or it will be bad for all of us? Or
I think people, when you get to that visceral conversation point, I think they're just thinking about themselves, actually.
They don't want to know it. They don't. It's better not to know it, not
right.
to talk about it, because then you don't have to treat it as part of the equation.
Well, it also shatters your world paradigm. I've written about this for a couple of, 3 years ago, I was saying, you know, when you realize what happened on 9/11, it opens up a whole new vista of information as to what American history has really been like, from the Jewish anarchist Emma Goldman being behind the assassination of President McKinley to the bankruptcy bill in 1933 to all the assassination of Huey Long, all of these things, all of these twists, the Army McCarthy hearings twisted in our minds and made to believe that we were persecuting these innocent people because we couldn't make the connection between, it's a media semantics thing, we couldn't make the connection between communists and Jews.
Very few people know that.
That's right.
But this takes some delving into history, because on the face of it, it's very hard to believe when, you know, Joe Schmo tells you that this makes this connection for you and says this is how it was. You can't believe it, because it defies the organization of history, as truncated
right.
as that might be in your mind. I'm not a historian. And so this threw me for a loop, you know. I didn't know anything.
Yep.
And as you start learning, as you fall down the rabbit hole, certain warrens, certain tunnels keep taking you to one place. And then you
really?
Have to ask yourself, well, did everybody else get to this place too? I've heard this from so many researchers,
yep.
yet it's a taboo subject. Now, I want to bring up, there is a wonderful man that I would like to have as a guest someday. His name is All Is One Hartsong. That's his new name. He lives in Mount Shasta. He has written a beautiful book. He's very spiritual, you could call it New Age. And a couple of years ago, he told me that we have been manipulated, that humans have a natural cooperation. They have a natural bent to help
mm-hmm.
each other. If you slip and you're next to another person, their
yep.
reflex is going to be to shoot their arm out and catch you.
Yep.
They are not going to let you fall to the ground. So that natural cooperation has been manipulated
yep.
into competition.
Yep.
We have been set up to compete with one another. And that's actually something laudable. You have a business. Your neighbor has a business. Who's going to be more successful?
Mm.
Then that competition is further manipulated into conflict. You actually perceive others in the world as impediments to your path. They are hazards. They constitute and represent hazards. They become enemies. There's difference between you that is magnified in your mind, and that's by a manipulation in the medium itself, the medium in which you live. And then that conflict between us, that's the result of several levels of manipulation, stages of manipulation, is then it devolves into, it's further manipulated into the lowest way that a human being can exist here, which is eat or be eaten, kill or be killed. And that's what we're experiencing now. Stage
well, I didn't think you were going to go that way. May I interrupt?
Yes.
I thought you were going to talk about, because there can be a relationship between buyer and seller, an honest relationship, and everything gets complicated by the middleman.
Yes, that's right.
The medium of exchange has, in our own inner value, has overtaken the really important things in life and become the means to get the important things in life. to the point where we're focusing on the medium of exchange rather than the important things in life. And I think that's primarily where the world has gone wrong. I guess it's greed. I guess we all have it to some extent. But the when we agree to the rule of law, we expect our leaders to follow it. And I think what's happened is, at least in my lifetime, is that the laws have been for us slaves, but the people who are really controlling things are not constrained by really any kind of law.
Those are the two classes of society.
Yeah.
There aren't three classes anymore. So the middleman, what is the middleman?
The middleman is the broker. It's the salesman. It's the exchange maker, the guy who sets the rates, the guy who conducts the transaction. He has stolen both the power of the producer and the power of the buyer by the lack, because so many people get rich off that occupation, in particular one ethnic group. So much money is made off those transactions that's where everybody's focus gravitates to, and that's really what has destroyed our economy, where the pyramiding of money became the desirable thing and the stealing of it as fast as could be done kind of overtook what Henry Ford spoke of as just the value of production and creating something. I mean, his empire was a legitimate transaction. His was not a con game. He produced a viable automobile that went all over the world, and it was a good product. And that now has gone. Nobody does that anymore. Now it's all how much money can we make, how fast, and it doesn't matter if the product is valuable. If it doesn't sell, we're not going to do it.
And it doesn't matter if the product is good or bad. It's just all about the way the product is presented and how it can create this lucre for you, which is money. So the medium in the transaction has taken over the transaction itself.
Yeah, and that's bad. That's wrong. That's nobody really profits from that in the long term, because eventually you destroy your economies, as is happening now. And the small number of people gets away with all the money, and the rest of us are going to be Bulgarians.
We're going to be what?
Bulgarians. Sorry, that was an ethnic slur, I guess. We're going to be inhabitants of a very poor country.
Yes. Well, the poor country, a very poor planet.
And I can't delineate all of the thoughts that I have, but I just have this overwhelming feeling that our problems stem from our holy books, where there's it's almost like a deliberate corruption. They make you believe something that's false, so they can make you believe lots of things that are false. We discussed this a little while back. I might like to go over it again because I think it's important. When you believe, I don't know if I can, when you believe you can't be killed and you have eternal life, that cheapens the life that you're observing, not only your own, but everybody else's. Conversely, when you're talking to somebody who you know is just like you and is going to die and never be here again, and you have that sense of immediacy and bond, you're less likely to kill that person.
That does make sense to me. It's a way of
being real.
Being real, yeah, but the perspective is very different in both cases.
Yep.
You're not, in the first, you're not really even here in your own life. You know? If you believe that you have another life that's better than this one, then why are you living this one?
Well, I think that's where the evangelicals are going. They're in a hurry to get to where the hell they're, whatever the hell has been presented to them, and they are rooting for World War III to happen. Of course, that plays right in nicely to the Israeli plan to subjugate or reduce to the level of chaos, anarchist chaos, all of the countries around it. And it's a ridiculous extreme at this point when you contemplate all of the other countries in Israel's neighborhood, they are all under siege from what we would call the Western banks. You know, it's like, what do we got? We got an armada over there. Iraq is destroyed. Syria and Lebanon are under siege. Egypt is bought off. Obama's going to invade Pakistan. And Afghanistan has the highest death toll of American soldiers in the history of our conflict there this year.
And you forgot Iran.
Ah, yes, Iran. What a beautiful country. What a beautiful people. In the National Geographic last month, they had a spread on Iran, and it really talked about their hospitality and their ability to, when somebody invaded their country and took it over, the Iranians did not become like the invaders. The invaders became like Iranians. Beautiful portrait.
But didn't you just say that that's what the Jews did? They became like the people that they... into whose countries they inserted themselves?
Well, when you look at the history of Iran, it has been pretty chaotic, and the chaos has been caused, at least in our lifetimes, by the Western powers first destroying the democratic government and then putting in their Shah. And so they've kind of been under siege. What was the question?
Well, we have the break, and we're probably going to forget the question by the end of it. So we have 3 minutes, and we'll be back.
Right.
Listening to Expansion on RBN with Sophia. This is the last segment of my interview with John Kaminsky, and I'm going to read one more thing. I want to get back to you as the newspaper writer. Without a shred of evidence, no, I start in the wrong place. The U.S. keeps planting phony stories in media around the world and then says, no, we're not planting phony stories. They can say anything they want without a shred of evidence and get away with it because the big boys own all the big media and the vast majority of the little people are just too timid, too powerless to confront the status quo. Well, if they can say anything they want, then we can too. And you see, this is what I think is at the bottom of it all. We have free speech, but we can say what we want to say. Are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay. So that line, if they can say what they want to, we must be allowed to say what we want to say.
I wish that were the case.
Yeah, but I think that thought is the beginning of creation. So we can't just sit there and go, well, that's not the case, so I'm not even going to do that.
When people, the most constant complaint I've had is I never suggest what to do. I write about all these things, and in fact, that's the complaint about a lot of writers, and I'm guilty of that too. But the what to do is present the information and analyze it and hear it. Hear what I'm saying. Get out of the daily titillation of the latest atrocity, the latest Osama bin Laden sighting, and think about the context of things. And if you really look just a little bit behind the scenes, you will find a pattern of engineering wars that is almost, as far as I know, is totally Jewish in origin. It stems from the Rothschild money machine, the bankers of Europe, the Bank of London, the City of London, and it is... It is a money-making machine that is above all else. The presidents and kings are vassals of this group, and we need to understand what this group is saying, and it's all on the record. You can read it. You can read the Club of Rome. You can read Albert Pike, and you can see what they're doing if you take the trouble to look for it. And if you don't take the trouble to look for it, then you're going to be like most of the people in the world, and you're going to be run over by some military machine in the very near future.
Now, Albert Pike was the head of the Freemasons. He was an American general, wasn't he?
Albert Pike was wrote the scenario of the three world wars in 1871.
Right, but he was. This was the Freemason plan.
He was the head of the Scottish Rite, and of course, Masonry is all tied up with Judaism.
It started as Judeo-Freemasonry, yes. All right, so we are at the end of our show. Maybe we'll continue another time. This has been very interesting. Thank you so much for being a guest with me today.
Thank you for all you've done, Sophia. Good job.
Thank you.